Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone, to State of Belief here on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance. Today, how do you feel when you hear an Air Force general say this?
My first priority is my faith in God, then my family, and then country.
I guess you'd better hope you're related to him, or at a minimum that his religion is your religion if you have one. Last week, the Defense Department's Inspector General found high-ranking Army and Air Force personnel violated military rules by participating in a promotional video for an evangelical Christian organization. Today, I'll talk to the man whose organization made that investigation happen. Plus, sociologist Peggy Leavitt, author of God Needs No Passport, will tell us why religion must be a part of the discussion on immigration in America. And I'll tell you how I caused a small uproar in the blogosphere recently. But first, about that Defense Department investigation. The probe centered on a promotional video for an organization called Christian Embassy. The group's website claims that it helps national and international leaders working in Washington, D.C., their spouses and staffs, integrate their faith and their work. But some describe it as an organization that evangelizes those leaders. Here's a typical moment from the video.
Like many other appointees, Undersecretary Dan Cooper makes time in his pressing schedule for a weekly Bible study.
It's not a matter of carving out time. It really is a matter of saying what is important. And since that's more important than doing the job's going to be there, whether I'm there or not.
That's Dan Cooper, Undersecretary for Benefits in the Department of Veterans Affairs. And you know, with services for veterans in this country in such disarray, it's hardly heartening to hear a high-ranking official brush aside his job so easily. But I digress. The Defense Department's Inspector General's report recommends discipline for six high-ranking military officers, including Major General Jack Catton, whom you heard in the intro to the show. The report found that they violated long-standing military regulations by endorsing an evangelical Christian organization while in uniform and while on active duty, and the report recommended, quote, corrective action against the officers. But this investigation probably never would have happened were it not for the efforts of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. That organization's founder, Mikey Weinstein, sent a letter to the Inspector General last year after discovering the video, and it was that letter that led to the investigation and the subsequent report. Mikey Weinstein has been fighting for quite a while now to protect the separation of church and state within the U.S. military, and he joins me now by phone from New Mexico. Mikey, welcome back to State of Belief.
Thank you so much, Reverend Gaddy.
Tell us briefly about the letter that you sent to the Defense Department's Inspector General.
We demanded an investigation for what appeared to be just the most egregious savaging and mauling of the constitutionally mandated, you know, separation of church and state, not at HUD or EPA or, you know, the Department of Education, but where all the nukes are, you know, at the Department of Defense. And we sent it in, and we also, of course, we filed two very expansive Freedom of Information Act requests for which we've never gotten anything back that's anything at all, just stonewalling. And then, of course, the report came out. Our lawyers in Washington were presented with the report late Thursday of last week, a week ago.
And I have seen the video, and I concur with everything you're saying about it. We opened today's show with a quote from Major General Catton, who said, "My first priority is my faith in God, then my family, and then country." I'm curious, what do you say to someone who watches that video and says, well, so what? I think he has his priorities in order. He's saying what he believes. He's supporting an organization he loves. What's the big deal?
Let me tell you what the big deal is. Our founding fathers assiduously looked at European history, and they realized that almost all of the tyrannies that had occurred in European history had been when men of the cloth Reverend Gaddy, had been men in political power. They looked at Cromwell in England. They didn't even have to leave our shores. They looked at the Boston, the Salem witch trials. And the problem is, look, I'm a person of faith, but the it's different. When you put on that uniform, there is only one religion in the United States, our honorable and noble military in the United States. That religion is patriotism. We only have one Bible. That Bible is the Constitution. We only have one Star of David or cross or crescent, and that is the flag. You cannot. The Pentagon is so concerned about the austere, draconian specter of command influence, Reverend Gaddy, that they actually have regulations in place that prevent people in the Pentagon up and or people in the military up and down the chain of command from even expressing the tacit nuance of support for Amway, Tupperware, and Mary Kay Cosmetics.
We're talking with Mikey Weinstein of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Mikey, how does evangelism in the military affect me? How does it affect our listeners who may not be in the military?
Let me make it clear. This represents, and it's not. Remember, it's not so much evangelism. We have a number of American evangelists that are tremendous supporters of my foundation and me, what we're doing. Because not every evangelist is a fundamentalist. Every fundamentalist, by necessity and definition, is an evangelist. This represents a national security threat every bit as much as big in magnitude, as formidability as magnitude and width and breadth as that internally, Reverend Gaddy, as that presented now externally by the resurgent Taliban and an Al-Qaeda that our most recent national intelligence estimate has determined to be at least as strong as it was on 9/11. This involves mixing the eschatological perspective of the end times brought about by the Book of Revelations with our nuclear weapons, our chemical weapons, our conventional weapons, our biological weapons. And it is beyond scary. This is exactly what the framers did not want to do. So that's why they put in the First Amendment these words that we will neither establish and we will also make sure that we ensure that we have free exercise. But I remind your listeners that when you put on the uniform of our country and the armed forces, you automatically become a second-class constitutional citizen. Many of your own constitutional rights are severely abridged in order to support the higher goal of good order and discipline to create a lethal fighting unit, an entity that is able to protect the full panoply of constitutional rights for the rest of us. Because our honorable and noble Marines, sailors, soldiers, and airmen, Reverend Gaddy, are in fact second-class constitutional citizens, they're very vulnerable. We have to be very careful to protect what they're doing. But this is what's happened. We've had our Pentagon has been turned into a Pentecostalgon, and our Department of Defense has been turned into a right-wing fundamentalist, faith-based initiative.
Mikey, I want to pursue that. Are you saying that the upper echelons of military leadership are so saturated with evangelical Christians that they are using this historic military personnel to advance a particular religion?
That is precisely what I'm saying. Let me give you the numbers. 737 and 132. We now have 737 U.S. military installations that the Pentagon acknowledges that we have, Reverend Gaddy. It's actually closer to 1,000, but scattered around the world as we garrison the planet in 132 countries. We have a fundamentalist, dominionist Christian organization called the Officers Christian Fellowship, or for the officers and for the enlisted. It's called the Christian Military Fellowship on every single one of them. Those organizations have a tripartite or three-level goal, and the military members that are awash in the huge numbers that belong to these on every military installation view these three goals as much more important than the oaths they all swore out to preserve and protect, support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Goal number one, and put on your seatbelt. They want to see a spiritually transformed U.S. military. It's right on their website. They're unabashed about it. Goal number two, with ambassadors for Christ in uniform, which historically over the last 2,000 years hasn't worked out too well for the planet. Goal number three, empowered by the Holy Spirit.
Mm. Mikey Weinstein is the founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. He is a patriot. He is talking to us about something to which we better pay attention as patriots. Mikey, I guess thanks for disturbing us, but for sure, thanks for being with us.
Well, I appreciate it. I always say that when I speak to people, I speak to them all over the country, I won't be happy until they're unhappy, because being unhappy for a human being means they want to try to actually do something.
And you can link to the Christian Embassy video and the Defense Department report from our website, stateofbelief.com. Still to come, religion's role in the immigration debate, and who's talking about bombing Mecca? Again, I'm Welton Gaddy, and you're listening to State of Belief on Air America Radio.
The Interfaith Alliance, defending democratic values and promoting religious liberty. Learn more at interfaithalliance.org.
So glad I got good religion.
This is State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. Do you ever get the feeling in August that everyone's on vacation except you? Well, sure enough, our producer, Brendan, has taken a much deserved week off. But all is not lost, because I can welcome back today the original producer of State of Belief, Isaac Aronson. Isaac, thanks for coming back. That's a vote of confidence, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's my pleasure to be back, and I'm, of course, a dedicated and devoted listener every week and been loving the show, and it's so great to be back producing it once again. You know, one thing that didn't get mentioned last segment with the interview with Mikey Weinstein about the Defense Department's Inspector General criticizing these officers who participated in this fundraising video is that the report was also highly critical of the Pentagon chaplain, Colonel Ralph Benson. Apparently, this report found that the chaplain knowingly misled the Department of Defense when he requested permission to film the video by telling them the video was about the Pentagon. But apparently, he wanted from the beginning to use the video to attract new supporters to this organization, the Christian Embassy. You know, in other words, it sounds like the Pentagon chaplain was kind of the organizer of this whole project. And I wanted to ask you, as a religious leader, does it particularly bother you when people in positions of religious leadership, particularly in civic or military organizations, exploit their influence like this for purposes of evangelism?
It bothers the heck out of me, but the whole thing bothers me, Isaac. I mean, my first thought, as you were describing the chaplain misleading people in making the video, maybe he wasn't misleading them. I mean, maybe this is the Pentagon. Maybe, as a matter of fact, that it is committed to an agenda that is more religious than it is civic or military, or at the very least, that it's giving more priority to that agenda than it should be given, because it shouldn't have any priority at all in the Pentagon. But it is a symptom of what's going on in our nation at virtually every level of a civic institution. We have seen it in the White House. We have seen it in cabinet agencies. We're now seeing it in the Pentagon. There is an unthoughtful, indiscriminate merger of religion and civic affairs, and that merger involves only one religion and actually only one segment of one religion, which is evangelical Christianity. Obviously, in the Pentagon, we have a chaplain who is not just interested in providing moral support for people in stressful situations and providing them comfort and resources for dealing with that, but he's interested in using an entire agency of the government and the military of the United States to advance his particular view of religion. There is no place for that in a nation that respects all religions and people with no religion, and that wrote into its constitution that the institutions of religion and the institutions of government should keep out of each other.
Well, I'm certainly glad that the show is still going strong, because it provides a much-needed place to talk about these issues. And you know, speaking of people and religious leaders and political leaders crossing lines, I understand you've got quite a red light award to give out today.
You are exactly right. Sometimes, as you well know, because you were here at the beginning when we started the Intersection Awards, We give out green lights, yellow lights, red lights at the intersection of religion and politics. But today, I don't know whether to give out just one big, bright red light or a whole truckload of red lights for Congressman Tom Tancredo. You remember Tom Tancredo, don't you? He's the guy who suggested a couple of years ago that a good response to terrorism would be bombing Mecca, Islam's holiest site. Well, now Tom Tancredo is running for president of the United States, and I suppose the one thing that you can't accuse him of is flip-flopping. We're at a campaign stop in Iowa just recently. He said, and I'm quoting, "If it is up to me, we're going to explain that a terrorist attack on this homeland would be followed by an attack on the holy sites in Mecca and Medina. That is the only thing I can think of that might deter somebody from doing what they would otherwise do," the congressman said. Really? The only thing? Look, I'm no terrorism expert, but it seems to me that if you're dealing with a small group of people who've declared holy war against you, probably the worst thing you can do is declare holy war back at the entire religion they claim to speak for. But regardless of what this says about candidate Tancredo's policies, one thing is certain. When a political leader endorses the language of holy war, when he fans the flames of religious hatred, whether out of ignorance or crass political calculation, he's making our problems worse, not better. Such statements promote the perception that the U.S. is at war with Islam. And in doing so, Tancredo isolates American Muslims, angers Muslims around the world, and makes it harder for the vast numbers of moderate Muslims to join us in denouncing terrorism. The language of holy war obscures and prevents the interfaith connections that are essential to promoting peace and understanding, and that makes us less safe. Shame on you, Mr. Tancredo. Up next, a look at how immigration is transforming and globalizing religion. Sociologist Peggy Leavitt tells us why God needs no passport. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. Nearly a year ago, Pat Buchanan came on State of Belief to tell us his opinion on immigration in America. Now, the fact that Pat subtitled his book, The Third World Invasion and Conquest of America, probably tells you all you need to know about where he's coming from. But what we really wanted to know from Pat was how he believes religion should factor into the national immigration debate. Surely, as an outspoken conservative Christian who stresses Judeo-Christian values in public policy, Pat could see the merits of leniency when it comes to prosecuting illegal immigrants. Well, not so fast, Pat said. He told us that religion should not enter into the equation. And if it does, Pat said that in his interpretation of Christian doctrine,
the first obligation of his father is to defend his family and the home.
Thus spoke Pat Buchanan. Well, we've struggled with that line of thinking for many months now. And with Pat Buchanan's appearance still lingering in our minds, our attention was drawn to a book that recently passed through the State of Belief offices. Peggy Leavitt is an associate professor of sociology at Wellesley College and author of God Needs No Passport, Immigrants and the Changing American Religious Landscape. Now, Peggy concludes that religion must enter into the debate about immigration because immigrants historically have altered the influence of religion in American life. If we want to understand immigration, she says, we must first understand the impact of religion. Peggy Leavitt joins us right now on the phone from Massachusetts. Peggy, welcome to State of Belief.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, what started you down this line of study?
Well, I realized when I was talking with immigrants that our understanding of immigration, our understanding of religion in America, and the way that we talk about those issues in our national debates are really was really out of sync with what I was hearing in the conversations that I was having. So one thing that was one assumption that was wrong was that people come here and they sever their ties to their countries of origin. Lots of people come here, become part of this country, they buy homes, they join the PTA, they start businesses, but they're also sending money back to their homelands, they're supporting family members back in their homelands, belonging to religious communities in their homelands. And these are not opposite processes. They're not antithetical to each other. It's possible to be a good American and become part of this country and to stay actively engaged in the economics and politics of your homeland at the same time. And more people are using religion to do that. And so what we also don't get is that religion is just as global as economics and politics. We understand that there are transnational corporations and that Coca-Cola is all over the world, but we might understand that the Catholic Church is all over the world, but what we're also seeing is that Hindu denominations like the Swami Narayan community or some Baptist communities are also worldwide and allow people to be part of communities both in this country and in the places that they come from and feel connected to people around the world.
Well, Peggy, can you give us an example or two of how religion has served to ground immigrants in their new home country and yet keep them connected to family, as you've talked about?
Absolutely, I can. Religion has always been involved in all aspects of the migration process. So whether it's, for example, Brazilians in Framingham who I talked to, a lot of them ended up coming to Framingham because they belonged to congregations back in Governador Valadares, and then went to find their co-religionists or their co-family members in Framingham who belonged to churches that then integrated them. Then as they go to church, they begin learning about politics. They find out about learning where to get a job. They find out about apartments. They find out about schools. Also through religion, depending upon whether it's a multi-ethnic congregation that includes Portuguese, Spanish-speaking, English-speaking members, they're also learning about the community around them and becoming integrated into the community around them. Let me say that I couldn't disagree with Pat Buchanan more. I think that his understanding of the world is putting us back to, the 1950s. We're in a global world. We need to be reaching out to other countries. The reputation that our country has right now is at a low point. And so people who know how to bridge cultures, who know how to live between Brazil and the United States, or who know how to translate Islam to Americans because they bring Islam to this country from Pakistan, or they know how to translate American Islam back to Pakistan, are at the cutting edge and are exactly the kind of people that we need to embrace rather than be afraid of. We don't need to protect ourselves and protect our families because this is our family. And, that's what's going to make America strong, not this isolationist, fear-mongering, turning our back on all the ways that immigrants have enriched our religious landscape and enriched our cultural landscape.
Now, who is it that is most resistant to your vision and theory of a truly globalized immigrant landscape in the United States? Is it American nativists who think this is a Judeo-Christian nation, or is it social scientist who thinks society is defined by territory?
Well, both. But I think who we're mostly concerned with here on your program are American nativists who want to, you know, or the people behind the idea of putting up a wall between Mexico and the United States. First of all, a wall will never work because it doesn't understand that so much of religious life and social life and political life is crossing that, and economic life is crossing that border already, that you couldn't stop it if you put up a 15-mile wide wall, you know. But I just think that people are, they hold on to this idea that, you know, we need to put up our borders, we need to remain a Christian country, and really, if you're really concerned about preserving religious pluralism in this country, strengthening religious pluralism in this country, you need to open up that Christian box. One of the points I'm really trying to make in the book is that not all religions look like Christianity, that many people are coming to this country bringing different ideas about what religion is and where to find it. They do a lot of popular religious practices at home. They don't have to go to a church every Sunday and worship with the same people every week. The idea that religion consists of Bibles, buildings, and boys, or in other words, that you go to this, you worship with the same religious people in the same church every week, and there's a male leader at the front telling you about a shared canon or a Bible that you all believe in, is not the way religion works for lots of people around the world. And so if we're really going to continue to preserve the legacy of religious pluralism and ethnic and racial pluralism in this country, we need to let go of that Christian box and open it up, expand it so that Hinduism and Islam and you know, Judaism to some extent also fit within those boundaries, and people can see themselves, their values reflected in the conversation, and they can see what they care about reflected in the conversation.
Peggy Leavitt is an associate professor of sociology at Wellesley College. She is author of God Needs No Passport, Immigrants and the Changing American Religious Landscape. Peggy, there's a new study out this week that shows that migrants from Mexico and Central America are facing increasing discrimination and finding it difficult to get jobs. And that's probably driven, at least in part, by the immigration debate in Washington. Is there a role that religion plays, for good or ill, in this worsening situation?
Well, I think religion has a very positive role to play. And in part, I wrote the book to two audiences. I wrote the book towards everyone, but I had two particular audiences in mind. First are the secularists who think that religion is going to go away and just want to pretend that it's not there. And it's not going to go away. And so you can either learn how to embrace, you know, learn to understand how people use religion in their lives, how it shapes their worldview, how it's not separable, that they don't put it in a box when they leave church at 11 o'clock on Sunday, and use that as a resource, as a social resource for change. And the other group that I was also trying to reach out to are liberal, progressive people of faith who have really let the religious right control the conversation, use religion as a very effective political tool, and, you know, we can take that back. We can have a backbone. We can say we want to bring values into the conversation, but those are values that tell us we can work with people of different faith. There's a lot of common ground here. Most people care much more about good schools and housing and a clean environment than they do about other issues that are more difficult to agree upon, you know, that are more hot-button issues. And so let's take faith back and let's bring it into the conversation and let's use it as a resource for social change. And, you know, we see this in the reemerging sanctuary movement, where churches are stepping up to the plate and helping illegal immigrants that are facing discrimination and needing more services that the government is cutting back on. And I see that as a very positive development, but only a baby step in on a road that has amazing potential.
Peggy Leavitt is the author of God Needs No Passport, Immigrants and the Changing American Religious Landscape. We have a link to that book at stateofbelief.com. Peggy, thanks so much again for being with us here on State of Belief.
My pleasure.
Up next, the blogging brouhaha that yours truly managed to stir up last week. I'm Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief on Air America Radio. To State of Belief, I'm Welton Gaddy. You've probably heard our regular segment called Blogs of Belief, where we look at what's going on in the faith-based blog world. Well, recently, there was one subject being debated in the faith-based blogosphere that caught my attention. Me. More specifically, my comments as president of the Interfaith Alliance on Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson's endorsement of Barack Obama for president and the response to that endorsement by the Obama campaign. The Interfaith Alliance, with my signature on it, has sent a letter to all of the presidential candidates asking them not to misuse religious leaders for political gain. Our friend, the minister and blogger Chuck Curry, wrote a thoughtful and very respectful response in which he disagreed with my stance. This, in turn, prompted more discussion and debate on blogs such as Street Profits, Mainstream Baptist, and many others about how far religious leaders can go and should go in their political participation. And let me tell you, I'm glad Chuck and other bloggers and religious leaders are having this discussion. This is one of the most important and complicated questions facing faith communities, and when I and the Interfaith Alliance can spark discussion and debate about it, that's a good thing. But I do want to take a moment now to clarify my concerns. One thing I thought got a little obscured in the vigorous online debate was that I and the Interfaith Alliance are less worried about religious leaders overstepping their roles by endorsing candidates than we are about what political candidates do with those endorsements. Politicians, even well-intentioned ones, all too often end up exploiting the endorsements of religious leaders in ways that can damage the integrity of those leaders and their communities. For example, when the Obama campaign announced Bishop Robinson's endorsement of Obama for president, the press release failed to make any distinction between Bishop Robinson's statement of personal political preference and the bishop's inability to speak for the entirety of the Episcopal Church. Now, I want to suggest to you that's unfair. It's unfair to the church, and it's a dangerous point of confusion related to the authority with which the good bishop spoke. That's why I urge religious leaders to be extremely cautious in how we engage with politics. Look, this is important. I want to be as succinct and clear on this matter as possible. Religious leaders have every right to endorse a candidate for political office as long as they make the endorsement as private citizens divorced from their position in the life of a religious organization. However, to exercise that right inevitably involves risks. The risk of being misunderstood and the risk of being used. For starters, a political campaign seeking voters is always eager to suggest that an entire segment of the religious community has endorsed its candidate, which of course usually would be untrue and always would be illegal. Religious leaders cannot endorse candidates for political office in their role as religious leaders or as representatives of religious institutions. But look, legality is not the big issue here, in my opinion. What is ethical is every bit as important as what is legal. I just want to stay away from any suggestion that a religious blessing, a kind of vicarious anointment from God, has been given to any one candidate in any election. And I want to avoid the manipulation of religious leaders by political campaigns singularly focused on winning an election. Political authority and religious authority should never be confused. The dual concern that motivates my comments on this issue is simple. I want to protect the integrity of religion and the vitality of democracy. To win an election by compromising religion or weakening democracy would be a hollow victory. To hurt both would be a disaster. Now, listeners, hold on here. It's going to get worse. You're going to hear more about this issue. Political campaigns are highly competitive. They are getting increasingly aggressive in going to religious leaders asking for endorsements and seeking to use houses of worship to advance their partisan causes. We're not going to let that happen without comment and challenge. Stay with us on State of Belief, and you'll hear what happens. Well, that's our show for this week. Don't forget, you're as much a part of this show as anyone. We want to hear your thoughts about what's been discussed on the show or anything else that's on your mind. Go to stateofbelief.com where you can send us an email, or you can call us at 212-871-8280. That's 212-871-8280. Get involved in the conversation with us and sign up for our email alert so we can let you know about State of Belief in your area. State of Belief is produced by the Interfaith Alliance Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, which means this show is supported by listeners like you who become members of the Interfaith Alliance. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. Next week, you'll get to meet some of the interfaith leaders of tomorrow. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.